Tommy said, Miller, the floor looks like it might be rotten. And Miller said, Tommy, get that open and let's go. So they loaded the cows up and got on and headed down I-75. And wham, bam, the trailer nearly comes. They nearly turn over, pull to the side of the road, and get out and look back. And the old cow's in the road with her legs about half shaved off, just in a daze.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Hayden, Alabama podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Bill.
I'm Jim.
I'm Larry.
So we're having to share a mic today. As you can see, we've got three guests, so we're the loudest.
And so we can share a mic.
We came over last night to Villa Now, Georgia, and we had, tell them about what we had last night first game.
Pot roast.
Tell them more about the pot roast.
It was fantastic.
It was the best pot roast I've ever had in my life. Miss Jackie, she's sitting over here. We put the feed bag on, they say, right? And we ate and we had a good time and really enjoyed spending time with them. But now we're going to tell some stories.
What we have is Mr. Bill's a longtime listener of the show, big-time supporter, which we greatly appreciate, and invited us to come over. And he said he had some old boys that eat at the – what is it, Mr. Bill?
Need to feed.
The need to feed, not T-O feed, T-O-O feed. We had a nice conversation about that last night. But so these guys fellowship regularly, and so they've decided to come fellowship with us today. So we're going to get to the storytelling, and Mr. Bill's going to take us away. So, Mr. Bill, tell us your first story.
Well, I'm going to tell you about a motorcycle I had. I had a when I was in high school, I had an Allstate 175 motorcycle, and that was the only way I had to go to school for a while. But the thing would carbon up, and I would lose power just up the road from where we lived at the time. My uncle had a service station, and his son, Tommy, was just wild as a buck. But he said, I can fix that thing. And it was late one afternoon, I took it up there, and he started working on the thing, took it apart, and felt like he had everything done on it. And he said, let's try it out. And I said, well, Tommy, it's dark. He said, that don't matter. And I said, but the lights don't work on my motorcycle right now. And he said, that's all right. Get on back there. We'll take it. So I hopped on the back of it, and he started out on 41 Highway. And the speedometer on the motorcycle registered, it said 80 miles an hour. Well, I'd never had it to 80 miles an hour. But we got on that thing and started down a hill. And I looked one time, and the needle was all the way past 80, and it was dark, and we were coming up on traffic. He pulls over and passes two cars, and as he went by, he had a flashlight in his mouth, and he would turn and look in the window of the driver with that flashlight in his mouth and go on down. And I thought I didn't know that I was ever going to get back home. We did make it to the foot of the hill, but that's the wildest motorcycle ride that I've ever had, especially with a guy with a flashlight in his mouth and the only light we had on that thing. So
I'm nervous already.
Well, I think he was just trying to prove to you he fixed it.
Oh, he was just that kind of guy. He could fix things and he could tear things up, and he wasn't afraid of anything. But he scared the liver out of me that day with a flashlight in his mouth.
Did he use it as a blinker?
Not then.
Those folks in the car had to be saying they don't even use their blinkers when they start the lanes up.
Well, you should have said they looked and opened their mouth. What?
And Tommy was a school bus driver, and he drove the school bus the same way he did that motorcycle.
For how long?
A long time. He would take people to sporting events and, the teams and that sort of thing.
The sporting event was getting on the school bus.
Oh, man, yeah. And he'd meet tractor trailers on bridges that says one-way traffic.
He was a dude.
Y'all must be hard-pressed to find bus drivers around here.
Well, we did. I've counted several times. I feel like I don't know what the Lord's doing with me still here, because he had several opportunities to get rid of me.
All you got to do is get in the car with Tommy.
Like. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Mr. Jim, you said you got several that you'd like to tell today. Won't you tell us one of yours?
I just got a buddy that's just, you know, a character. And it's one cold February day.
Hold on a second. Was his name Tommy?
No, it's not Tommy. It's Miller.
Continue. I know I'm not supposed to interrupt, but I figured I'd go ahead and interject real quick.
But it's one cold February day, and he's a professional guy, but he hobbies with a farm. So it's time to sell a few calves. And so had one old cow and some calves he was going to sell. So back to trailer up there, and he had a sort of a half-wit helping him. And said, Tommy, get in there and get the trailer doors open and that sort of thing. And Tommy said, "What, Miller, the floor looks like it might be rotten." And Miller said, "Tommy, get that open and let's go." So they loaded the cows up and got on and headed down I-75. And wham, bam, the trailer nearly comes. They nearly turn over, pull to the side of the road, and get out and look back, and the old cow's in the road with her legs about half shaved off, just in a daze, just right in the middle of I-75. So they say, "Oh my goodness." He says, "Tommy, get in there, put this old plywood over the hole. We got to get out of here." So he says, "Miller, they'll kick me." He says, "It don't matter. It won't hurt. Get in there, Tommy." So Tommy gets in, gets the plywood back over the hole. So they get on the Calhoun, the cattle sale, unload the cows, come back, and that old cow still sitting in the middle of I-75. So they go home, undo the trailer, and get them a come along and another piece of plywood, go back and right in the middle of I-75, back up to the cow, get the come along, load it up, pull it up there, go home, calls his buddies, they slaughter the cow, barbecue it, and have a party.
True story. That's
true.
You mean to tell me that cow stayed in the middle of the interstate for over an hour?
She was in shock and just, you know.
She didn't have nowhere to go. She didn't have no foot.
She didn't have no feet to get up.
So that literally was ground beef. I thought it was going to be shaved beef.
Oh, Lord.
That's an awesome story. Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services, or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show. Did you say you had another one you want to follow up with that?
Well, I was in politics, you know, a little bit in state capitol, and had a buddy, and he was a character. He was, at that time, you had to be a Democrat to be elected. This is back, you know, a long time ago. And, but he was the lone Republican in the House, of State House. And the Speaker gave him the job. He had a little old committee he was chairman of. But this particular bill, it was for the handicapped. And if it had passed, the state had had to tear down the Capitol and start over. You know, it was just, you know, too much. But so he gave it to Luther Colbert. He's the lone Republican to kill the bill. And Luther, don't let this out of committee, you know. And so it got attention, and there was cameras in this committee meeting. And I mean, it was a big deal. And there was wheelchairs all over the Capitol. There was people just limping around. It was a sight now. And so finally, the meeting goes on, and finally Luther slams the gavel down and says, "Meeting adjourned, lack of emotion," and got up and tried to get out. They was trying to run over him in wheelchairs, and he finally got on the steps. You know, there's a lot of steps. They couldn't run over him. But one of them rolled right up to the edge and said, "Mr. Colbert."
Lord. That story was awkward 3 seconds into it. I knew that there was no way that was Oh, man. That's a bad day.
That's a bad day. He had a bad day that day. Oh, Lordy.
He was just doing his job, too. He wasn't the bad guy. He was the scapegoat.
He was the scapegoat.
Miss Larry, you got something I know. You got a whole pile of stories.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Give us a good one.
Most of them about me. My first job when I got out of college was working for Bill's dad. I got my mechanical engineering degree from Southern Tech, and they needed a draftsman. I guess they did, or they gave me a job anyhow. And I sat at a drawing board all day, drawing up textile equipment for carpet industry. And they was having a blood drive there, and I thought, well, you know, I'm a respected member of society now. I need to do my part. And so I went down to give my blood. And so guy comes in, takes a sample of my blood, comes back in a few minutes, and he said, Mr. Baxter, I noticed from your blood sample that you're a little anemic. I said, really? And he said, yeah. Have you been sick lately? No. And have you had an accident, lost blood? I said, No. Then he says, well, what color is your stool? And I thought, well, this guy can take a blood sample and see what I do all day long. So I said to him, well, the one at work is green. And just as soon as those words left my mouth, I realized what this guy was talking about. I said, oh. But it was too late. He got up and he said, excuse me. And he went out of the room, and I could hear people out in the hall. There's a laugh. And finally, he come back in there and took my blood. But I don't know what they did with it, but that was a fun day.
Words have multiple meanings, you know.
Yeah,
right. In the English language.
Yeah.
We can excuse that, can't we?
The one at work is green.
The one at work is green.
Yeah.
When I'm at home, it's a different color. Mr. Larry, go ahead. Let's just stay in your lane. You tell us another one.
The legend of Oppie's leg. Several of us in the committee run around together, and later Bill gave us the title of Insignificant Seven. You've heard of the Magnificent Seven? We was the Insignificant Seven. And one of the people that was in the group was Johnny. And he used to run around with this other boy named Gene. And Johnny lived right next to the cemetery. And Johnny and Gene would go past the cemetery down into the woods out there squirrel hunting. And so coming back, there was a barbed wire fence between the field cemetery, and so they was crawling through the barbed wire fence, and Johnny went first, and Gene followed, and somehow or another, and Gene crawling through the barbed wire fence, he got his finger on his .22 rifle trigger, and all of a sudden, he shot Johnny.
Oh.
And so Johnny takes off running, and Gene throws down his rifle, takes off after Johnny trying to catch him, and he like never caught. Finally, he caught Johnny, and the bullet had entered at the thigh of his leg, went all the way through his knee and come out the calf. They took him to the doctor and nothing was hurt. And that was Johnny. Stuff like that happened to Johnny. Well, back to the cemetery. Gene had a brother and his name was Oppie. Oppie's real name was Frank, but they called him Oppie. And probably his junior, senior year, he developed some kind of bone cancer and they had to remove his leg. And had to remove it all the way up the hip. And so Oppie, he wanted to know what they were going to do with that leg. And they said, well, we, you know, have a way of disposing of body parts and stuff like that. And he said, don't sound right. Said, I want to bury my leg. And so in the cemetery across from Johnny's house, they buried Oppie's leg. My uncle was in charge of having the cemetery taken care of, mowed, and that sort of thing. And he had this new guy that he was going to hire to mow the cemetery. And he was trying to figure out how much to charge the guy that was going to mow. And he said, let's tell you what, let me mow it one time, and then we'll decide how much it's worth. Come back after he'd mowed the cemetery, and my uncle said, well, how much are you going to, or how hard was it to mow? Would you have any problems? He said, no. He said, after I got all those rocks moved out of the way, it was fairly easy. Oppie's leg. And several other people in there just had a rock. They didn't have a headstone. So Oppie's leg is somewhere today in that cemetery. Nobody knows, along with several other people that are buried in that cemetery. All we got left is a pile of rocks over there.
The legend of Offie's leg.
I thought it was going to be the legend of the unmarked tomb. You have several unmarked tombs.
Yes, yes.
Oh, man. But there's nothing you can do about it at that point. Oh.
Nice mowed cemetery.
Did he get
to
keep the job, or did y'all just say, we're
no,
going to look for somebody
else? Kept the job. He needed to work.
I got you. That's horrible.
Rate went down.
Yeah, he probably didn't get as much for it, though.
He didn't argue about the rate.
I bet he didn't. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking about selling your timber, I know a guy. When Andrew Laughlin called me, I quickly realized that his main concerns were standing by people's side and helping them avoid regret when making a once-in-a-lifetime decision. Andrew is a small-town Alabama guy, family man, and second-generation forester. Laughlin Forest Management specializes in timber sales, management plans, reforestation, and all things private land management. Do not let that log skidder near your property before you give Andrew a call at 334-804-7490. Now, Mr. Larry, you were in the military.
Yes, sir.
And the military produces good stories oftentimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you give us one of them?
I wasn't just in the military. I was in the U.S. Navy, and okay. I wasn't just in the U.S. Navy. I was in the Seabees. You familiar with the Seabees?
I'm not.
It's a play on CB, Construction Battalion. Oh. And we were always with the Marines. In World War II, when the Marines would hit the beach on those islands, you know, seen all the movies. Well, the Seabees would go in there with them because they got to have a way to get off the beach, and they've got to have somewhere to set up camp and stuff. That's the Seabees. They started building and had a slogan, we built roads so fast that the Japanese retreated on them. So when the Japanese retreated off one of the islands in the Pacific, they left a lot of the stuff behind. And one of the things they left behind was a goat. And the islanders had never seen a goat. And so the natives went to their chief and says, hey, the Japanese has left this animal down here. He says, what are we going to do with it? Do we kill it? Do we eat it? What do we do? He said, well, describe the animal. He said, well, it's real mean. It just butts everything. It's got a long beard, and it smells terribly bad. He says, oh, no. You, chief said, don't kill it. That might be a CB.
Oh. Did y'all appreciate that?
Fit right in.
Yeah. That's those guys that build things. Mr. Bill, you had a situation that could have had an aroma in a faraway land one time.
Yeah, we went to Liberia in West Africa on a mission trip. The kids in this village started calling him Old Man Johnny. He was the oldest guy in the group, and he was kind of gray-headed, and they just called him Old Man Johnny. His name was Johnny. Well, he and I decided, hey, we gotta have a restroom. If we're going to stay here for 2 weeks, we're going to have a restroom. Well, come to find out, they had started digging one up on the side of one of the hills. So he and I, that was our project to get up there and get to work on it. We were in on the edge of this hole that we had dug with all that stuff in the bottom, and Old Man Johnny got his bandana out and was going to wipe his forehead, and he dropped it right down the middle of that thing. Well, before anybody could say anything, squat or anything, two of those kids had already hit the bottom of that thing and grabbed that bandana and brought it back and said, here, Mr. Johnny. And Mr. Johnny says, no, you can have it. I don't want it anymore. So that was sort of a close stench that we got into there.
He loved that bandana, but not that much.
Yeah, he didn't like that bandana, but those kids, they were just, you know, always trying to do something for you, and they thought that they were doing a good thing for Old Man Johnny. But
well, they did.
Yeah,
they did. It was just they just didn't appreciate it so much.
No.
We're not from Villanelle, but we got some characters in our neck of the woods. Y'all got any of those over here?
Yeah, we got one Tunnel Hill that was not only eccentric, just different, and smart guy in a lot of ways, but in other ways, you know. So before even anybody ever wore a mask for anything, he wore a mask every day. This is back in the 70s, you know. So he not only wore that, he wore a football helmet when he was driving his car. A little little germophobic, you know. So, but he sold insurance and he made a good living. But
that makes sense. that tracks.
But anyway, he called me little. He was a good bit older than me, and he called me Little Jimmy Tyson. And he said, I run into him at the store, and he said, Little Jimmy said, I'm running for sheriff. Want you to vote for me. I said, Paul, you running for sheriff? Yes, he is running for sheriff. And I said, okay. So, you know, rocks on, the election comes and goes, and I'm reading the election results in the paper, and Paul got one vote. And so I run into him again. I say, we went to church together. He was there every Sunday carrying his cushion to sit up front. But anyway, so I run into him and I said, Paul, what you got them six guns strapped on you? Two, just like the Wild West, tied down at the knees. And I said, Paul, what you got them guns on there for? He said, Little Jimmy, said, you ain't got no more friends than I got. You got to carry guns. And that's
one.
Just the truth. That's just Paul.
At least he got a vote.
It was his vote,
he voted for himself.
You didn't vote for the man.
Well, I don't think I was old enough to vote at the time.
I gave you all the credit on that. I thought he followed through and gave that vote for him.
He said, well, I wasn't old enough to vote. You heard that.
Yeah, I know. He didn't get the vote from him.
But he had paid poll workers in every precinct, and they didn't even vote for him.
Oh, I feel bad for him.
He drove a station wagon, and you know these RVs that have the air conditioner on top?
Yeah.
He had one of them mounted on his station wagon.
This man was living in 2020, and y'all were still back here in 1970.
That's right.
He had that air conditioning going.
Yeah. So I sold him a piece of carpet. I was in the carpet business when I was younger and put in his bedroom, and he called me about 3 days later, says, Little Jimmy, said, these little things coming up out of that carpet, you got to come get it out. I said, Paul, what things? Hey, you got to come get it out. There's things coming up. So me and my partner, we go take the carpet out. And it's the bedroom, and there's three walls that don't have windows, but there's a fireman's axe on every wall. I said, Paul, what you got these fireman's axe in here? He says, son, this thing gets on fire, I chop 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 my way out of here.
Paul was prepared.
He is prepared.
I just want you to know, you took me to Paul with the football helmet on as an insurance salesman. You couldn't have been any better at selling insurance. Just know anything could happen.
That's right.
Be and you
aware.
Need this insurance, because part of selling is allowing somebody to know they need something before they ever even recognize it, right?
He had it. I guarantee he was well insured.
He was a good insurance agent. I had insurance with him. Everybody had insurance.
I guarantee he lived it, right? He's like, wait a minute, y'all don't understand. Y'all need, this is a need. This ain't a want. This ain't a luxury. This is a need.
Yeah.
Tell him. Tell him about the door on the front porch. You remember that?
No, I don't know if I do.
Oh, well, he and his wife would get in spats. And he came home one night and the door was locked. And he talking about those axes. He chopped the front door down, took it off. After he got in, took it off the hinges and left it on the porch for weeks and weeks and weeks.
No door.
He had no door on the front of his house.
He finally put another one on there, but the one that he chopped down, he just set it out on the porch for everybody to see.
And no, that wasn't for everybody. That was for his wife to see. Just know,
I am willing to chop the door down. Remember what happened last time.
Well, he'd get in fads, and the first time I'd never even heard of a juicer. He was trying to sell me a juicer. I said, well, Paul, I'm not much of a juice drinker. Let me pass on that. But anyway, he says, come in here, and he showed me where he is, and he is juicing carrots. He said, it's the best stuff for you. He said, this will, you'll last forever. Just, you got to drink. And he got to drink so much that they had to put him in the hospital. He turned plum orange.
Carotene to cook the cold. Wow.
He overdosed on the carrot juice.
This man was all in on what he did. If it was,
he was all in. He was all in.
And he
so
sold.
You have too much of a good thing. Is that what it is?
He sold check writers too. That was one of his. That was one of his things.
Now you're gonna have to explain that.
You know what a check writer is?
Old check writer. Put the numbers and flop it down.
Pull a lever and it printed the amount on the check.
Huh.
He sold them all over the place.
They used to have them at the Piggly Wiggly. You go check out and they'd type it in there and
chunk.
Down to go.
Mm-hmm. But he had a basement with just rows of commercial shelving with all of these products on it. He was a character.
Interesting guy.
Along that line, my uncle had chicken houses, and so I worked for him. And so at 16, you want a car. So one of those insignificant seven fellas told me that his uncle had a car for sale. Now, his uncle, he had a few issues, shall we say. Fine fella, just like this other guy. But one of the things, he had a stroke, and the whole side of his face, I can't even pull my face down to where it was terrible. And, well, Mr. Burt, he liked to ride around after he had a few drinks. And there was one area in Tunnel Hill where the road paralleled the railroad tracks. And so you go down a certain distance and the road turned across the railroad tracks and paralleled on the other side coming back. Well, Mr. Bird, he is out driving one night, got down that road, turned, go across, didn't quite get to the other side, made the right turn, cussing the road commissioner for the terrible roads that was, and as he put later, all of a sudden, this thing with this big bright light came up on the back, hit Bert, drove that back seat up to the front seat, knocked him off the tracks. Well, the people come rushing, law, everybody, first ones to the scene, they looked at Bert and they said, oh, no, his eyeball's falling out. So they rush him to the hospital, and come to find out, Bert wasn't hurt that bad at all. And so his brother, Significant Seven's daddy, came to visit Bert. He said, Bert, you're going to have to quit that drinking. You're going to get killed. Bert looked up at him.
Said, that guy behind me didn't have but one light, and he had it on bright the whole time.
He didn't even have the courtesy to dim it. And then he hit me.
Why are y'all talking to me? Y'all need to talk to him.
Who's ready to fire another one at us?
I'll tell you about my friend. His plant manager knew that Kenneth had been in the Navy. Been on an aircraft carrier, and he knew he had been in the South Pacific. And more particularly, he knew that he had been to Japan. And they had a group of Japanese buyers come in, and they were going to give them a tour of the plant. And his plant manager came and said, Kenneth, you've been to Japan, you know some Japanese, don't you? He said, yeah, I know some Japanese. And he said, well, when we get these after the tour, we're going to come back into the conference room, and I wondered if you'd come in and say a few words to them, make them feel at home. He said, yeah, I'll do that. So they got the guys in there, and he called Kenneth in and said, Kenneth, come on in and say a few words to these guys. So Kenneth comes in the door and he says, Toyota, Honda, Kawasaki, Suzuki. And his plant manager said, Kenneth, what's wrong with you? Come over here and get out of here. And as he backed out the door, he said, sayonara. That's the kind of guy. That's the kind of guy he was. He
yeah, I know Nicky Stephanie. Don't you worry, boss. I got you, boss.
He almost got fired for it, but.
Great. I dare say some of those ain't even Japanese words.
I don't know. He thought they were.
I couldn't dispute it one way or the other.
That's like reading a Taco Bell menu to somebody who speaks Spanish.
That's all he knew. Jim, I think, has got a story about Kenneth, too.
We went just out to eat fast food and looking at the menu. It had grilled chicken sandwich, fried chicken sandwich, another kind of, and I just watching them, and Kenneth was talking, sort of had his back to the menu. But anyway, got up there. The little gal says, what you want? And he says he wanted a chicken sandwich. She said, what kind? He says, Rhode Island Red, about half grown, be fine. She didn't know what to say.
Unless you got a Dominic, and I'll have a Dominic.
It's just quick-witted, but
weird.
Different.
He was. Tell them about the Brotherhood Breakfast.
Well, he was in charge of getting our speakers for Brotherhood Breakfast, and we met on Sunday morning for Sunday school. And so I think we met at 8, something like that, and he says, now, are we maybe met at 7:30? Speaker started speaking at 8, and he said, now, and this was our associational missionary that was going to speak to us that morning. He told him, says, now, at 8:30, we need to be done because we got to get home, get ready for Sunday school. You know, we'd cook breakfast and all that. So the guy's speaking, and comes 8:33, and Kenneth gets up, turns his chair to their back, flops it down, and sits with his back. Well, he got through pretty quick. He finished his talk.
He didn't have to say anything.
He didn't say a word. He just
did. Don't you put no timer on me,
man. I mean, at least he did give him 3 minutes grace. Yeah. But it was over after that.
After that, it was done.
Yeah. I remember Jim's son is pastor of Tunnel Hill First Baptist Church. And when he first started preaching, you went right by Mill Creek Baptist Church over there. Well, Jim's son was doing a 3-night revival or something over there one night.
It just got started, really, preaching.
Yeah. We went over there, Kenneth and I, and I don't know, several of us, we went over there. And at the end of the service, Tyson, Jim's son, had an altar call, and he also said, you know, every head bowed, every eye closed, and if there's anybody that, you know, raise your hand. Nobody will see it but me. That just incensed Kenneth. As soon as the thing was over, he just flogged Tyson. He said, don't ever do that. Don't ever do anything like that again. Now, I don't know exactly what he had against that kind of thing, but I don't know if Tyson ever did it again.
No, he never did it again.
It taught him a lesson, I guess. Yeah.
Kenneth wanted to know, too.
Yeah.
I want to pray for these folks. Yes.
He got me to speak at Brotherhood one time, and my subject was on, is God fair? And I could see Kenneth squirming a little because I was sort of saying, well, God's not fair in certain situations. And I could see him squirming, so I just kept on putting that way, and he is really squirming. I said, if you think God's fair, I said, why am I so good looking and you so ugly, Kenneth? Oh, that was over. I never could get control. It broke up the party.
You couldn't drill him back in.
I couldn't get it back in. He is mad at me for 2 months.
Oh, bless his heart.
He'd hold a grudge, you think.
Once it was over with him, though, once it's over, it's everything's all right again.
But it'd take a while.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he'd got mad at me a time or two and wouldn't have anything to do with me. And then one day he'd come in and everything's all right again.
Philip's the same way. Every now and then he just gets mad at me.
He's real sensitive. I believe that's what you said.
That's the exact word.
Sympathetic. Sympathetic. Is the latest scathe against me that I'm not sympathetic. All right, fellas, we got time for one more story apiece. So we're going to start with you, Mr. Bill. Tell us your final one.
Okay, this was when I was in high school. I had to take a business arithmetic course. We were sitting in there one day, and the teacher asked this question about freight rates. She wanted to know why the freight rate from New York to Miami was less than it was from Miami to New York. And she called on me. I didn't even know why. I said, well, it's downhill from New York to Miami. She flew out, said, get out of here. She expelled me from her class. So I had to go to the principal's office. And fortunately, that day, the principal was a friend of ours. He was taking the principal's place. He was substitute. As soon as I walked in the principal's office, said, what are you doing down here? And I said, well, she made me come down here. He said, here's the keys to my car. Go to town to run an errand for him. I said, oh, man, I got this made now. So I went, came back. I was in the same teacher's homeroom. So I went to homeroom. Not a word said. Homeroom the next morning, nothing was said. Then I came back to business arithmetic class, and she said, you're expelled. You can't come in here. I thought, oh, Lord, the principal's back now. She made me go to the principal's office. And I learned my lesson. It's not always you think you got it made, and you ain't. Because he took me into the adjoining room, and he wailed the fire out of me with about a 3-foot paddle. Mm-hmm. So for that smart aleck remark, I got my feet lifted that day, buddy.
I think I would have said the same thing, though. That's exactly. I don't know.
Made sense. Yeah.
The discipline threshold has really changed a lot. I don't think they would have ever even made it out of the classroom today.
So she thought you were just being a smart aleck, and that was why you were expelled. Well, I probably was being
a smart aleck.
I see.
But that wasn't the only time he had confronted this lady.
Now the truth is starting to seep into it. All right, Mr. Jim.
It's back to my buddy Millard's, an accountant, and him and his partner were asked by some clients to go to this hearing. This guy's trying to develop a golf course and build houses around. They wanted investors. So his client said, go see if this is something I might want to invest in. So they get away early and head towards Calhoun. And his partner says, hey, let's shoot some ducks. It's February. It's duck season. He said, I don't have my waders. I don't have a shotgun. He said, I got an extra pair of waders. I got an extra shotgun. So, okay. So they get out and they're tromping through the swamp down around to where they're going to shoot some ducks, and bam, their ducks start. So Mike starts banging away. Miller's still trying to get around there, and he trips over a fence, you know, old fence down under the wire, fills his waders full. He's wet head to toe, and it's cold and freezing. He says, Mike, I got to go. I'm freezing. We got to get. He like never got up. Mike's still banging away. And so finally they go, and he gets out of the way. So what am I going to do? I don't have time to go change clothes. The meeting's time's here. And he thought a minute. He said, well, take me to so-and-so's washeteer. They had a client had a washeteer in Calhoun. So Mike lets him out at the cafeteria, and he goes in. Mike goes on to the meeting. He said, I'll get away. I'll call somebody. I'll get away on to the meeting. So He goes in there and he looks around. Of course, it's evening. Nobody's in there. So he strips off buck naked, shoes and all, and puts them in the dryer, turns it on, gets in the little supply closet, and it won't lock. He's just looking around. Well, here comes the cleaning lady, and she's cleaning around, and she tries to get in the store, and he's holding it too. Finally, he tells her something. She screams and runs out. Finally gets her back in there and explains the situation to her, and he gets his clothes. You imagine a suit's been in a dryer and dried. He gets it all back on just however it was, and finally gets into the meeting, and they all, Mike's done told a lot of them about, and it just ends the meeting, you know, hey, horse life in him with that wrinkled suit on.
Oh, man. It seems like that Murphy's Law comes into play way too often. Mm-hmm. If it can happen, it will happen. Yeah. Oh, that's a sick feeling. Mr. Larry?
Military story. I mentioned to you about the Seabees. They weren't real big on being military, real spit and polish. But the Marines were. And when we were in Cuba, for some reason, our commanding officer would like to invite the Marine colonel over to inspect the troops. And my green fatigue uniform that we were going to stand inspection in was real comfortable. The sleeves, it looked like I had tassels hanging off the sleeves. Anyhow, we were out there standing in formation, all of us standing there, and we had our M14s ready for inspection, and the Marine colonel is coming down the line. Now, if he stops in front of you to inspect your M14, you're supposed to slide the bolt back so he can see that there's nothing in it and check it out. So he comes to me, slide the bolt back. He grabs it, looks at it. Now then, you've got to return the bolt. So you got to put your thumb in the top where it ejects the shells and push the receiver back down so that the bolt will slide forward. And as soon as you touch that receiver, it will go forward. So the trick is to get your thumb out before the bolt comes back. Lots of folks don't do that. But anyhow, I get my M14 back, so I'm standing here, and he moves to the next guy, my buddy, and he asks him a military question. Soldier, what's your military assignment? And he said, forward observer for an 81-millimeter mortar, sir. The colonel says, huh? Says, what's the range of an 81-millimeter mortar, soldier? And I gained a lot of respect for my friend right here. Without missing a beat, without stammering or anything, he looked that colonel right straight in the eye and said, that's classified information, sir. The Marine colonel moved his head in right between the two of us and the soldier's ear, and he says, that's all right, son, I'm cleared. Snapped to attention, walked on down the line.
Classified. Did he not know what it was?
Didn't have a clue.
They didn't have a clue.
We only fired the 81-millimeter mortar one time during my whole 2 years in the Navy. And we were on the firing range. You got the mortar down here, the forward observers, which I was one of too, over here, and the fire control. Well, they fired the shell toward the target out there. Didn't miss it far. And so we called back to fire control and told them, you know, needs a little bit, a little farther, a little, how many yards. So we could see the mortar, and they were over there cranking that sucker. I said, why are they moving it so far? It's not, they didn't miss it much. Anyhow, they got ready, so fire, boom. So we're looking, and all of a sudden, over here in the swamp, the shell lands. So that thing had come up, went across the top of us, our forward observers, and landed in the swamp. That was the only time. We didn't shoot the mortar no more. It was over. Mortar shooting was over. We went back to the house.
They need a little more training on twisting them knobs, I think.
They just have fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's time to do the scripture time.
Amen.
And Mr. Beal has given us a text this week that's real special to him, so we're going to walk out of Ephesians and walk into Psalms. This is Psalm 25, verse 7. It says, remember not the sins of my youth and my rebellious ways. According to your love, remember me, for you are good, O Lord.
Amen.
It's a very encouraging text. And we've talked a little bit about all of our youth today. where Shane and I didn't. We talk enough about our youth. But if you've listened to any of the other shows, you understand that we have made a lot of mistakes. We've done a lot of things that didn't glorify God in our youth, and we still stumble today. But what I love about this text, and why I'm glad that you brought it to our attention, Mr. Beal, is this is really casting everything you've got upon the love of God. You're saying, I've done a lot of bad things, and I've done some good things, but even those are not going to be enough.
Yeah.
And I would really just want to entrust my eternal destiny to God and your love. That's powerful.
And I think as you read that, some people may have never read this scripture before, and you may be thinking, well, what is the love of God? And my immediate thought is, that's Jesus Christ, and that's where I put my trust, that's where I put my hope. And when I stand before God one day, it won't be what I accomplished, it won't be what I failed, it'll be only the blood of Christ that was applied to my life that he sees. And I'm so thankful that that's what we have our hope and eternal security in.
And how does one, if somebody's watching today, they say, you know what, I think you're right, and I want to be a recipient of the blood of Christ. I want to be a recipient of God's outflow of love, which was through Jesus Christ. How do they do that? How does somebody get that?
The only way that we're going to receive that is through believing and repenting of the sins that we've all committed, right? We all know, just as the scripture said, in our youth, particularly in our youth, I would dare say less aware of my decisions and those decisions against God as I am now. I look back and I see how far away some of those decisions were, and turning away from that is repenting, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to turn away from that, and I have to put on, I think you and I talked about this week, I have to put off the old man and put on the new man. There has to be a turning away of what that that life was, and believing on Christ, repenting, and acknowledging his power and his ability to save me.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing about it that I think a lot of people have a problem with, it's hard for us to imagine that he forgets all that stuff, that he'll forget all of that, because we keep remembering things that we've done, and it's over with him. You did it, it's over. We don't hold anything against you because of the care that he has for us.
Yeah, Christ died once for sins. Mm-hmm. He's paid the penalty. And just to sum up what you said there, and what you're bringing that from right out of the Bible, Romans 10:9-10, it says, whoever believes and confesses Jesus is Lord, that person shall be saved. But I think here's where I fall in short, and where, just in case somebody, maybe you've never been to church, never read your Bible, never know anything, I just want to break this down a little bit. It's not a belief and confession that Jesus was a man. It's not belief and confession that Jesus walked this earth, was a great teacher, was all those things. Yeah. That's not what it's saying. It's saying believing and confessing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, was the unblemished atoning sacrifice for sins. Believing in that, and believing to the point that he is Lord, he is the leader of my life, he is the one I'm going to follow. And the repenting, just to, real quick, because that word, we don't use that word a lot, but it's the illustration of repenting is walking one direction, stopping, turn around, and walk in the complete opposite direction. And so when you're being saved, when you're saved, you're repenting from essentially two things. In order to follow Jesus, you're going to have to unfollow yourself and what you want, and you're following him. But the second thing we're repenting from is you're turning away from disbelieving that Jesus is Lord to turning to believing that Jesus is Lord. So those are the two, I guess, key parts of repentance that we're talking about. And you don't want to say this, we've never said this on the show before, but if you have questions about that, that's interesting to you, you want to know more, you can always send us an email, admin@HaydenAlabamaPodcast.com. These are the conversations that we long to have, we love to have. We love to tell stories, but we really like to talk about Jesus' story. So if that's something that interests you, want to invite you to do that.
And to conclude the show, we got two games. So I know you're disappointed and you're going to be sad, but the word game has been missed by several of our community. So we're going to play one round of the word game.
I know who it ain't been missed by.
Man, ain't nobody tired. Everybody's tired of listening to you whine. It's just so bad. I wish you would repent from your whining.
Oh,
there you see what I did there? So we're going to play one round of the word game. Mr. Bill's going to lead it. And after the word game, we're going to do the 60-second story game. And our word for the 60-second story game was determined earlier today, and it is slipping. And so we're going to talk about a 60-second story, the funnest time slipping. So we're prepared for that. But let's start with the word game. Mr. Bill, you're up. Lead us out.
Highway.
Too long.
That didn't last long, did it? No,
that was way too hard. I don't even know what I would have done with that in thinking about it.
I was going too old.
Yeah, that's tough. Mr. Bill, you did a body slam on the word game version. Okay. Maybe give it a little bit more easier, easier subject.
Okay. Let me think a minute. Yesterday,
I went
to
the
barn
and got
some
hammers,
two
nail boards
against
the
wall,
and it
fell
to
the ground.
Two words.
He said two words. We're gonna have to put the loss on Mr. Bill this time.
I'm just glad
he broke the rules.
I was gonna go put the period.
You were wanting a period. Yes. You just couldn't do it. All right. So it's time for the 60-second story, and I think what we'll do is we'll just go in circles. Instead of doing paper, rock, scissors, let's just go in a circle. And go.
Well, this was when I was in high school. I decided to slip around and play hooky one day. And a friend of mine and I, we took off and stayed hidden most of the day. And then that afternoon, I knew I had to have a note to go back. So I called a girl in my class and asked her to write me a note for class. So the next morning I go in and I give the principal my note. And he says, who wrote this? And I imagine I lied then because I probably told him my mother. He said, you know, I picked up the phone yesterday, and we're on the same party line as the girl you talked to asking about this note, for me to write a note for you.
Wow. Got caught on the party line.
Party line. You're supposed to know that.
I was nailed.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
You should have known you can't say stuff on the party line you don't want everybody to know.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thought about him being on a party line.
That's called bad timing.
No, it's
and
terrible.
And bad timing produces good stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mr. Jim, you ready? Hold on, we're going to let you get started. I'll hold my hand up on a 30-second to give you time frame. And go.
I was a young Christian, and they asked me to come in and help with the youth one time. And I forget the subject, but it was pretty passionate to me, and I let a bad word slip, right? And it just... That was the last time I taught for a while.
Oh, man. That was during your message.
Yeah.
Oh. The passion came out in the wrong way. Wrong
30 time. Seconds, and he was there.
Awesome.
That's pretty good.
Uncomfortable situation.
You got that right. Let me see if I can
Very.
Get started.
We're going to get reset right here, Mr. Lair. Cancel.
All righty.
And
sometimes it takes me a couple of times to learn by my mistakes. I figured out that Crocs are not the best footwear to wear when you're working. I was moving some stuff down some steps, and I didn't know that it had rained the night before. I started down the steps, and all of a sudden, I was at the bottom of the steps. Those Crocs slipped on them steps, and I got to the bottom and I said, thank you, Lord, that's over. Oh, man, I was hurting so bad.
All right, so it's my turn. 60-second story was slipping. Here we go. So my friend and I, Mike, we like to look for airheads. So we were slipping one day, and we were out looking for airheads, and we were around this old barn, and we hear a truck coming, and Mike goes running in the barn. I thought, Lord, that's the last place I want to be found is in these people's barn, you know? So we go in there, and he's kind of hiding over in the side, and I'm watching out the window, and they come around, and they're looking, and they're just talking, and they leave. Well, Mike didn't see them leave. And I turn around and look, and I see Mike, and, my heart's beating out of my chest because you don't want to get caught. And he's dragging his foot. And I said, Mike. And he turned around and he's drooling. And I thought, Lord, Mike's had a stroke, you know. His heart attack, his blood pressure's got up. And he looked at me and he said, are they gone? I said, yeah. I said, what's wrong with you? He said, Lord, I didn't know. I was just going to pretend like I was your messed up brother and you was out here looking for me. So he had formulated a getaway plan. And
He was healed
immediately. He said, are they gone?
When I was 14, I got into playing basketball. Never played much until that time. And my mom and dad got me a nice basketball goal, one that you actually cement in the ground, and they put it out there in the side yard. Well, the side yard was grass, and I was out there, and I hadn't played very much, so the grass was still very green and plush, and I was out there, and I started shooting layups. I shot a layup, did pretty good. Next time, I ran a little faster, shot me another layup, and I said, you know what, I'm going to see how high up I can get on this next one. As soon as I took the power step, mm-hmm. There was nothing. It was slick as owl grease, and my feet came up and leveled up with my eyes as I flew through the air, slammed on the ground, and that basketball comes down and hits me on the chest. I quit pop up my look around to see if anybody's looking. Nobody saw me. That was the last day I shot. I did a power layup on the basketball goal at the house.
Man, 2 seconds left.
Well, guys, in Villanow, Georgia, we've had a good time.
We've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. From glad yesterday all the way to today. Started out and finished good. I reckon about time for us to get back to Hayden, Alabama.
We got to get on the road.
We're going to pack this stuff up. That's going to do it this week at the Hayden, Alabama podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Bill.
I'm Jim.
I'm Larry.
We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
See you.